that call now, 209-2950. We have about 5 minutes left. We need just nine more of you to call, and we can say, yeah, we were there when something nice happened at BAI, something that will help you in future days to reverse the tyranny of the 1%. 209-2950. Yes, okay, now, just eight more people. Yeah, oh, come on, there's another one. We need seven!
209-2950. Seven more, folks.
Seven more. Let's see. Okay. Seven, maybe even just a half dozen more. I've lost count. We've got, okay. This is WBAI. We're quite responsible here and sane and collected at all times. But we can almost taste it. Just seven more people to call in the next 4.5 minutes. Please. Yes. All right. A half dozen. Michael.
Half dozen. Wow. Six calls.
Yeah.
Six people calling in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Somebody call from Harlem. Somebody call us from Queens. Mm-hmm. Somebody call us from Brooklyn. Somebody call us from Connecticut. Call us from Staten Island. Let us hear you. Five cities, exactly. 212-209-2950. 5 o'clock shadow with Robert Knight on WBAI. 212-209-2950. The 1%.
Everywhere. Occupy $100. Your phone.
Thank you so much for those calls. You're coming through great. Let's
we
hear the
four
phones.
More.
Four more calls.
Four more peers.
You be the one to pick up that phone.
Yeah, we can do this.
Call.
Four
you
more
can do
people.
It. You can do
We've
it.
Got 4 minutes. Four people. But we are able to do simultaneous processing. Please make that call now. We really just need four of you who really do believe in the station and the work that we try to do here. And we give at the office every day, area code 212-209-2950. You're part of the mix here. You're part of the rule breakers and the change makers. 209-2950. We're traveling this road waiting for four more of you to call. 209-2950. Yes. Okay. Just three more. Thank you. Three more people. Let's show them how we walk it on a shadow, y'all. 209-2950. This is for the entire station and for your edification and your emergency knowledge system in the crises to come. Okay, there's another one. Oh, come on now. Just two or three more calls. 209-2950. Why? I will never drive a Jeep Cherokee. You know that song where the brother talks and sings like that? 209-2950. I don't know why that came in my mind. 209-2950. We're providing the DVD of the extraordinary revelation of the rich called The 1%, a pledge of $100 to WBAI, makes our life, our wealth, our health, our communality possible. Yes, we're going to do this. 209-2950. My, what a beautiful day. The sun is shining, sunny and bright. 209-2950. My name is Robert Knight. And that's Michael G. Haskins. And we're going to make it. 209-2950. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Michael G. Haskins. Thank you, Delphine Blue. Back there, I hope she's under a paper slide of Tally Lag. Because, and all the volunteers, management staff, and you, the listener sponsors who made WBAI not only possible, but necessary. Keep calling 209-2950. I love each and every one of you. And this has been a special edition of 5 O'Clock Shadow. Thank you so much.
Substrate of the cosmos. It guides the very current of time and space. The way is known by some as the will of God, divine providence, the Holy Spirit, the implicate order, the Tao. force entropy, life force, but for now, we'll simply call it the way. The way is reflected in you as the source of your inspiration, the source of your passions, your wisdom, your enthusiasm, your intuition, your spiritual fire, love. The way takes the chaos out of the universe and breathes life into it, giving it divine order. The way, when expressed by the mind...
Thank you, Robert Knight.
Earthwatch was brought to you by Corning. This is WBAI, New York. Good morning. Is this Hour of the Wolf? A Wednesday night program of science fiction, fantasy. We did that, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With me is Ken Gale. But the question remains, is this Hour of the Wolf? Well, sort of. Stay tuned.
Fine, and now he's mine, 'cause the merry-go-round went. And the merry-go-round This is Hour of the Wolf. As stated before, live. My name is Jim Freund. With me, Ken Gale.
No.
There you go. Oh, yeah. And so the mic is actually on. So this is the first time in the 3 weeks where I haven't started the show by not being able to start the show. because 2 weeks ago when I had Graham Slight, which until this minute people could have heard on the archive, because it's a two-week archive.
Right.
The first 20 minutes were trying to get him, trying to get Skype to work on this computer.
Ah, yes.
And it said, you know, kept saying, no, wrong microphone, which doesn't, the call went through. But it, you know, just, you know, the sound wouldn't. And that was 20 minutes of doing that till finally I learned a secret about.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, my way would have been cheaper for the station.
Yes, right.
And then last week, it was only about 2 minutes that I was screwing up. And that one was my fault, though. This week, well, it sort of started except for me talking about it. But this week isn't a proper show.
Why isn't it a proper show, Jim?
Well, Ken, I'm so glad you asked. It's because it is the end of the fawn. And he said, speaking into the microphone heavily, which probably isn't a good idea, given that I've had a cold. But I don't think that cold viruses can go through the broadcast
ways. Not yet.
Exactly, not yet. But we are working on it.
Yeah.
And what this...
I think Dollhouse Technology is right around the corner.
Yeah, this is not really a marathon. This is really what we used to call a mini-thon. We don't even call them marathons much anymore, do we?
No. Years ago, I was in the presence when somebody used the word and somebody else said, no, we don't say that anymore. Don't say that. And I was like, what, huh?
Why not?
And I was new, so I didn't understand all the hubbub about the word marathon.
Oh, you couldn't? No, when you were new, we were still using the word.
Yes, but somebody made a big deal about you. We shouldn't be using that word.
And did they bother explaining why not?
I think they did, but it didn't make any sense to me because I didn't know all the references they were using.
It's because somebody was... You know, it oppressed people who ran 26.2 miles. Is that the...
And I guess that's when they started, they're fundraisers, they're not marathons. Because they were never 26.2 days, were they?
Actually, they were that and longer. we have seen drives that were much longer than 26.2 days. Lord help us. But, even they're taking the equipment now, even as we speak.
We're being evicted. Sydney's come in, he's evicting us. He's taking away the equipment as we're in here.
He heard me say I had a bit of a cold. And so he's replacing all the microphones. So that's basically what it comes down to. So,
That's it, Jim. You can't talk anymore.
No, I know exactly why he's doing what he is doing. Let me take the pot down first. That's a potentiometer when I say that to people. Okay, let me... look at that. Look at that. Sydney put me on mic.
A better mic.
Definitely a better mic.
I've been meaning to fix that since I discovered something was wrong a few days ago.
Oh, except that it's been wrong for years. We need. What are these mics? These are not.
They're greasy.
They're greasy mics. Yeah, I know. But are these cardioid? They're not omnidirectional.
No, they're not.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Is at least on the announcer's seat here, they need to be omnidirectional.
They all need to be because guests are always moving their heads around.
They are. They're reading a book.
That is true.
Change the attitude. They turn on their laptop. Say, thank you, Sydney. Thank you, Sydney.
Thank you, Sydney.
There you go. And that was, by the way, that was Sydney.
And now he's gone.
But not forgot.
It's as if he wasn't here at all.
Oh. It's not even his shift. Actually, his shift ended at midnight.
Yes, it ended an hour and a half ago, and then some.
Yeah. So, but this is, theoretically, the last gasp.
Right.
of the fundraising drive. Lister follows.
This is the very last show.
And he does the last show. And it would be nice. You know, the likelihood. Our station.
This is the second time I've done the last show of a fundraiser this year.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I came in actually. Sydney and Marianne Miller were on until midnight having a great time. And I came in and we were like $600 away from like a something $100,000 mark, you know, it was. And I was not willing. I was not willing to go out on, you know, not making a major tally mark. You know, we don't want to say, oh, we made somebody 9,000, you know, 500. And it's like, no. You've got it. Yeah, that's where we were about $600 away. So I just, you know, said no.
Well, I was.
We will do this.
I was doing Ecologic at end of the drive, and Max came in and helped me pitch, and we made our goal during that show.
Yeah.
But, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, but we don't really have. I mean, if we were to make a proper goal from what I saw in the tally room.
Oh, if you want to make that goal, then
that would
you
be
have,
about $1,700.
Well, maybe more like $37,000.
No, if you want to go to a rounder
the
number.
The actual goal.
Oh, is that the actual goal?
The actual goal is, we haven't made the actual goal and we're not going to. Unless you have about 37 people pledged for Dr. Arlie's complete library. It's $1,100.
Oh, okay.
You get 16 DVDs, 14 books, $1,100. So if 37 people do that on your show, you will make the goal.
That would be historic.
That would be.
I think that's the appropriate word. That would be historic. But nevertheless, it would be nice if we got, a little money.
212-209-2950.
But why should they give money?
To support WBAI, to support Hour of the Wolf, to support science fiction on the radio.
To support arts programming.
Arts programming.
To support programs that are not only about learning about ourselves and others, but provide entertainment. I have to say, we got
entertainment where you don't have to check your brain at the door.
Yeah, especially. I was so pleased with last week's show.
Because I'm thinking about, lots of places you get entertainment. What makes BII special? And I realize that's what it is. You don't have to check your brain at the door.
I was going to make a snide. Yeah,
indie,
snark.
Indie film, indie music, indie radio. You don't have to check your brain at the door. You can engage it.
When you go indie theater, you don't have to.
Indie theater,
But last week's show, if I say so myself, my guest was Gregory Maguire, who I had interviewed a little earlier in the month, and I played the recording of the interview with him. And for those who don't know the name, Gregory's most recent books are his Wicked series, The Wicked Years. You may have heard of the Broadway show based on them, which is, of course, a very light retelling of his books because his books are very political. They are very dark, just as Frank L. Baum's books.
L. Frank Baum.
That guy's books, they were very political and very dark, unlike the 1939 musical. And so Gregory's book is very political and very dark, unlike the Broadway show, which undoubtedly will become a movie. They don't make shows that are that commercial that don't become movies.
That's for sure, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And, the Baum estate is on board. I mean, Gregory owns it. Anyway, he owns his book. So, but the point is that we had a wonderful discussion about the politics of Oz, the politics of Gregory, how that turns into this fabulous stuff. Mm. He then read from the beginning of the fourth book, which can be best described as the trial of Dorothy Gale. This is where she's finally back in Oz. She always gets back to Oz. And she's not the lead character of the book, but she's a central character. And they put her up for murder of, and I'm blanking on her name, but the Wicked Witch of the West, Elsbetha or something. well, more, something more complicated than that. But and the section he read was just absolutely, you know, wonderful and charming and provocative. Yeah. She's in San Francisco for the first time. You know, she's lived in Kansas all her life. She's seen a lot of Oz, but she's in the United States, in Earth. She's never seen anything but Kansas. And she goes to San Francisco and she sees the ocean. It's misty. It was very early in the morning that she goes
misty,
out.
Misty, moisty morning.
It was a misty, moisty morning in June in 1906. And she's going down in the elevator. You do know what happens next, right?
Yeah.
Oh, the building began to quake. It's the earthquake.
Uh-huh.
It's the San Francisco earthquake.
All right, 1906, right.
And it sends
right.
her back to Oz. The timing is perfect. You know, if you follow the Oz chronology, it's just absolutely perfect. I mean, the thing is so full of wit, and yet it's very dark. It's very, very political. It's very much about today. And we never did get to talk about... on air, we didn't talk about Gregory's children. He and his husband, who's a very famous painter, Andy Newman, have three kids. Two are Cambodian, one, I think, Central American. And these are central to their life. It was just, mm-hmm. you know, this is just like how cool an interview. This is, you know, as literate a person as you can have, and the very fact that he is so literate and so literary is oh so political.
Okay, yeah.
It is. When you listen to him talk, you are hearing the joy of fantasy literature and how much politics it brings into one's life. And yet, there's a dearth of this on the radio.
That's for darn sure.
Yeah. And it's first of all, it's only non-commercial radio that even dares broach the topic in this country.
Yeah.
And secondly, it's mostly Pacifico radio. The Mike Hodel, who was an occasional co-host of Hour of the Wolf, in the very early 70s, uh-huh. when he was our news director, before he went off to KPFK and became, I think, their news director and started a science fiction fantasy show, half-hour show called Hour 25, which still exists as a podcast. But Michael died in the early 80s and very, very young. He wasn't 50. And he...
And a bunch of people took over the show.
Yeah, well, the first
to keep it going.
Well, the first person who took it over was Harlan Ellison.
Mm-hmm.
Harlan was a very frequent guest and sort of benefactor of the show in terms of getting guests on there. And his main stringer was Joe Straczynski, J. Mm-hmm. Michael Straczynski, who was generally talking about his idea that could never float. He had an idea for a long-term TV show called Babylon. It had a number, Babylon 5, something like that.
I missed Babylon's 1 to 4.
Yes, exactly. And well, except for seasons 2 and 3 and part of 4, I didn't miss. And I certainly didn't care for Babylon 5. The show petered out. It started weak and it ended weak, but it had some brilliant moments in between. And great costumery. Did you ever see it?
I saw a few episodes in the beginning, but I quickly realized that this was something you have to see every week or don't bother. So
yeah, it's an, yeah.
And my life is such that I can't put aside any given hour of every single week. So I just didn't watch it.
Yeah. So Joe Straczynski and Harlan did it for a while, for maybe like a year and a half, enough to give it real legs, and then other people from within the station, from within KPFK, came in and gave the show a new life. And then it was taken off about, 7 or 8 years ago, and they turned it into a podcast.
Hmm.
And they're all very reverent of Michael, as well they should be, damn it. He was a great reader, wonderful guy. He did a lot of good stuff for WBAI, but they also attribute a number of things to him that, I'm sorry, just aren't true. Well, but that's Wikipedia, but I'm not going to go in there.
Oh, yeah.
There were a few claims made, like his was the longest-running science fiction show.
Oh.
Well, there's a problem, given that he did Hour of the Wolf.
Right. Yeah.
And Hour of the Wolf is still on the air. Sorry. Hour of the Wolf came earlier and is still there. So that was one thing. And the other claim was that he was the first person to broadcast Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And that's so untrue. It's wrong by weeks. Maybe about 2 weeks. Because it was a person from the BBC who went around and gave us pirated, illegal copies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You had to be a BBC. You had to have the proper BBC transcription player, because these were on like 14-inch LPs.
I see.
And so in order to do it, yes?
No, about... yes, no. About Hitchhikers.
Yes, we were first. That's right.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Larry Josephson got it.
That is correct.
Got it. It was passed on to the Early Morning Radio Alliance. We all played it.
That's right.
You know, and
I think I was the first. Was
you
I
may
not?
Well have been. I don't know.
I was certainly in EMRA.
EMRA. You know, the Early Morning Radio Alliance is basically what you're listening to right now. And anyhow, I'm sorry, whoever you were,
It's a fan of Mike Hodel's. This pirate who gave the 6 discs to Josephson, this pirate went from WBAI, from the East Coast, and I think he went then to KPFA.
And distributed there, but we got it first.
And he distributed there, and then to KPFK.
Right.
But we got it first, and we broadcast it first.
Oh, what's his name? Oh, God.
The pirate?
No, the real author, the real...
Adams?
Douglas Adams?
Well,
that's the name of the pirate!
Oh, well... I was.
Funny coincidence, that.
What a coincidence. Two guys, same name, same show.
I wouldn't be telling this story anyway, if he wasn't dead.
Yeah, like I am. I was behind, in the old station in Midtown.
Yeah, but he tried harder.
I know. Behind Master Control was a rare fire escape door where we kept Pacifica T. Cat's cat box. And just as he was walking in, Pacifica T. Cat was doing what he did best in his cat box. Live before him, and I was standing right there.
Distributing litter.
He was distributing litter as the gentleman came in, and Larry was standing there too. And he was
distributing
saying,
litter.
And he said, "Well, welcome to WBAI."
Yes, exactly. And it was a good example of WBAI politics in action
at that time.
Yeah, well, like it isn't now. yes. Douglas was actually, I don't remember why he was officially here, but he gave these discs to Josephson, who in turn gave them to EMRA, which of course I snatched. And we played them all in 1 week, so I think what happened is I was on twice a week in those days. And so whoever was on Monday started it. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, 5 a.m. every morning. And Thursday and Friday.
I remember listening to you at 5 in the morning.
Yeah, well, it was only a year ago. I was still on at 5 in the morning. A little over a year ago.
Right, during the week.
13 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, during the week, I got switched in, I think it was 80. When was Steve Erickson program director?
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, what he did was he took his best friend, Simon Locley, and he cut his show. Cut it in half. Simon was 5 to 8:30 a.m. And he cut Simon's show so that it started at 7 a.m. and put me on Saturdays 5 to 7, which I didn't want because I was on weekdays.
Right.
And he said, no, no, you'll have a better audience on Saturdays. And, you know, God darn it, the fact that he was right doesn't excuse anything here.
Mm-hmm.
I really went kicking and screaming.
I remember when you were doing Music of the Wolf or whatever you called it.
Song of the Wolf.
Song of the Wolf.
Because I was told that we could not do talk radio or anything but music radio. At that hour, by one particular program director who was extremely anti-arts.
Mm-hmm.
And but music was okay because even revolutionaries can have music. So he in fact initially gave my show to somebody else without telling me. And I came in, and that other person who is still with WBAI and is a charming, really cool person, M. Saidi McLaughlin, I came in with a guest. And she said, what are you doing here? And I said, this is my show. And she said, you didn't talk with Samori? I said, no. And she said, I really beg your pardon. And she left. And I felt awful for her. And she felt awful for me.
Mm.
That was a really sad thing. And after that, it became Song of the Wolf.
Uh-huh.
For about 5 or 6 months. And I got into a huge fight with Samori over the politics of science fiction and how relevant it was. And I went out and I got a copy of The Dispossessed by Ursula K. Le Guin, which very much covers Samori's politics.
Yeah.
And I slammed it on his desk with gritted teeth. And what's this for? I said, this is for you to read. And understand that this is a woman who I've interviewed, who's been on my show, and this is what it's about when I'm doing the show.
Yeah.
And he
read it?
And he read it, and he restored my show. So for whatever short-sightedness he may have had, he listened.
That's interesting. I'm wondering
if... That's a cool story. I mean, well, I've never forgiven him for his attitude to begin with. I think it was wrong attitude. But the fact that he was willing to adjust his thinking.
That shows tremendous growth and open-mindedness that, you know, well, I made this decision and therefore it could only be the right thing because I made it.
Yeah.
And there are certainly...
I went through the same thing with Tony. When he first took Hour of the Wolf off, he offered me a different time slot. A Saturday morning time slot that is currently... I won't say which, but I hope you all like your James Joyce. And he offered me that, and it's like, no. You know, it's just, I don't like this. And then he said, you don't. Well, what would you like? So again, I was taken aback. He talked to me.
Hmm.
He was actually very good. And lo and behold, he talked to Robert, and I got this slot.
Because I'm just thinking about
Samori. So one can talk to these people.
Samori not... understanding Nuff said at first.
Mm.
Yeah, here I am interviewing writers and artists.
Nuff said was the comic book show.
So I'm interviewing writers and artists in comic books, and he didn't quite get it. And then he listened to it and then started using it and is an example of a well done show, and everybody should listen to this so they know how to do a good radio show.
Well, it's true because Nuff said wasn't just about comics and that. There are a few people here who do shows that are so good that even if you're not interested in the topic or the style of music isn't your style of music, and the show that follows me with Lister, Burn Baby Burn Clappers, is not the music I listen to. But he is so good on the air that it's compelling that you just want to keep listening.
Well, I like that kind of music, so I don't know. I don't come from the same perspective.
Yeah, well, I come from the perspective of that's not my music, and I listen to his show.
But Chris Wendt
that
plays
says a lot.
Now, Chris Wendt plays all this church music, which I would not normally like.
Well, I just like early music.
But I love his show.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite music shows, period, any station.
Presentation.
And, you know, some people can do that. And this station is where they play it.
Exactly, because, you know, there aren't too many places where you can do it.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. So, we're just, moving the breeze. But at the same time, we are also pointing out something that ought to be clear to people, which is the uniqueness that is WBAI. The fact that the programs that one hears here are, as one person used to put it, a unique. That in the 60s, and for the record, I started volunteering here in 1967. In the 60s, we were the people that broadcast The Goon Show and all these wonderful things. We were doing radio drama left and right. Baird Soles was our drama and literature director and had amazing people doing radio dramas for him, Samuel R. Delaney, producing radio, not just writing and narrating, but producing a couple of... Yeah. Oh, no, actually, he only did one major drama. The other ones that he did here, I produced. But...
And the point is that commercial radio would never have done these things.
Yeah, I mean...
Even shows that proved to be incredibly... Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy... Right, a lot of people would. Oh, yeah, sure, I'll play it. Well, at the time, they wouldn't have.
No, not at all.
No commercial station would have played it then.
There was one other New York station that would have, and that was WRVR.
Right.
And the other listener-sponsored station in New York. And then they tried an experiment, which was commercial First Amendment radio. And it lasted a little under a year. It was a wonderful idea. And they did really good programming. I mean, they did better jazz programming than, WBGO or some of our great jazz shows.
RVR is...
But it was too early.
Yeah, I mean, I think decades from now, people will still be talking about RVR. People who weren't alive when RVR was doing jazz will talk about RVR as a great jazz station.
But RVR and BAI used to trade BBC programs. We got the stuff first, and after we played it, one of my jobs, I had very important jobs when I was, a young teenager, would be to run discs from BAI to Riverside Church, where RVR was located. Later on, they moved into Brooklyn. But I was like, the courier taking – so we actually, we'd get phone calls. You have such and such a record? Can we get it in an hour? And we would do that, and they would return the favor. I mean, this was not – there was room in the world for the both of us. WNYC in those days was New York's municipally owned radio and was yet a different kind of a character. But we actually had two listener-sponsored stations in New York, and we were both good. But RVR, the Riverside Church, I think was their funding for so many years, and sooner or later that funding went away.
Mm.
So they tried to be a commercial WBAI. They tried to be a commercial Pacifica radio station, is a better way to put it. And it just, it just cannot work. There will come a point when the people who are paying your bills will say, unless you do A, B, and C, I'm not paying.
Right.
Thereby basically proving the assertion that listener-sponsored radio is the thing that is going to get you past a certain point. It is what's going to allow the programming to be what you want. The problem is that running a commercial, listener-sponsored, a non-commercial, listener-sponsored radio station in New York in the commercial frequency, being 99.5 FM, that means that we have to pay that much more for the Empire State Building, that much more for the transmitter. We have a 50,000-watt transmitter to support. We have to pay Manhattan rents in two locations, both for the transmitter room and for our studios and offices. So it's expensive.
That it is.
So three words, gang. We need money. And, what's the premium that I've got to offer? The premium that I offer is just this once. WBAI lives. For those were Doctor Who fans. That's a paraphrase from a particular episode. The Doctor Dances is the name of that episode. God help me. But anyway, just this once, everybody lives. That's the actual quote. And that is the point here, is that we need to assure the future of WBAI. And what Ken and I have been doing is assuring you of the significance of the stations.
In a nutshell, the significance of it.
And of good radio. Like Nuff said, if you weren't, you didn't need to be into comics to appreciate the show.
It was one of the joys of the show is how many non-fans listened. And I've heard the same thing about Hour of the Wolf. You know, I'm not really into science fiction, but I really love listening to it.
That was my...
And of course, that was when it was on Saturday morning when people would get up, you know, and sort of like...
And discover it.
And the first thing they would do is, you know, they'd turn on BAI and listen to you reading a story. And they just thought the most wonderful way to wake up on a weekend was to hear somebody reading them a story.
Exactly. And the initial reaction was, is this WBAI or is this WTF? And, you know, what the Freund. And the you know, certainly what I do is somewhat unique. There are other shows and science fiction shows and other stations in the country. But the format of Hour of the Wolf is still unique. What I do with the show is unique. And I started the show as a kid and started doing stuff as a kid. And, you know, very, very fannish. What today people would call geeky at a time when being a geek wasn't cool.
Right, yeah.
And
whoever thought it would be.
Yeah, right. And then, you know, we would come back. Yeah, you know, I'd go to a convention, a science fiction convention, come back from, say, Toronto and say, well, you know, what's important in fandom? Well, the answer to that is which place had the best Mandarin dumplings and which Appa, we have our own language, which Appa talked about it the best. And John Singer said this, but Gary Tesser thought that, and you know, Hope Leibowitz said, you know, and this was the shape, and that's what I would do on the air, because I figured, well, that's what the science fiction world is about, right? And then at some point I began to realize the numbers. I was talking about this with you off the air earlier, saying, you know, there are more people at the worst hour of the broadcast day, at the least listened to hour in the broadcast day, we have three or four times the number of people that attend all science fiction conventions in a year. And that's, you know, at a bad time of the day. We are broadcasting. And that's when I realized that I had to not be less of a geek, but instead of be from the inside for geeks, I had to, well, shall we say, be the geek that people could look in through a window and have fun with.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what we try to provide on this program. And since I came on Wednesdays, I still haven't, and it's almost, I think it's almost exactly a year. I think this is the first anniversary of Hour of the Wolf continuing in a time slot that isn't the Hour of the Wolf.
But I heard a wolf. I heard one.
Well, there are wolves, but it ain't the hour of it. The Hour of the Wolf is the time between night and dawn.
Crepuscular.
There you go. And this is something, again, that a lot of people get wrong. And the reason they get it wrong goes back to J. Michael Straczynski, who did an episode of Babylon 5 called Hour of the Wolf. And in there, the character Ivanovich talks about Hour of the Wolf, and she just gives totally the wrong definition. Absolutely the wrong definition.
So what definition does she give?
She said it was like at 3 a.m., the time when people, you know, should be asleep but are awake, and... it was a dark time to think, and, you know, made it very mysterious and very dark. I was absolutely wrong. You know, put on your headphones. I will tell you what the Hour of the Wolf is. Here. If it's dark. There we go.
The Hour of the Wolf. is the hour between night and dawn. It is the hour when most people die, when sleep is deepest, when nightmares are most real. It is the hour when the sleepless are haunted by their deepest fear, when ghosts and demons are most powerful. The hour of the wolf is also the hour when most children are born.
Probably conceived, too.
I don't think neither.
A lot of montage here. This is a movie trailer.
Uh-huh. So how old is this movie?
Ingmar Bergman's Hour of the Wolf. The hour in which reality becomes a mockery of madness and masks hide behind faces. The hour of all final moments.
It's the twilight, and you know, in the way north,
crepuscular light,
where Ingmar Bergman is, you have very, very, very long twilights.
That is true.
So that's the hour of the wolf. It's twilight. It's the time between night and dawn, as it says in the movie trailer. By the way, quite a good movie. I mean, it's not a great Bergman film, but bad Bergman films are better than most people's better films. Are you going to tell us the cast, or are you going to leave us hanging, guys? Come on. Long trailer. But it's an actual movie trailer. This isn't like the TV version. I should cut this down.
Max von Sydow. Liv Ullmann in Ingmar Bergman's Hour of the Wolf. A diary of truths and lies. Like truths.
Ooh, a diary of truths and lies, like truths. I've never used that line, although it comes from the original.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea...
Most political commentary is lies, like truths.
Yeah, how about that? But this is not a Bergman concept. It is an ancient Roman belief and very common Scandinavian belief. It's the Vargtimen. The wolf time. And this is nothing new. But until J. Michael Straczynski basically, you know, dashed off that episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so now there's this punk rock band called Hour of the Wolf. And there are all these people. And they think Hour of the Wolf is 3 a.m.
I see.
Or something like that. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Big Monty Python hammer comes down. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Bang, bang, bang. It's basically, well, it's somewhere between 5 and 7 a.m. That's when it is, gang. But after 39 years of working on this show, I've only been the host for 36 or 37 years. But 39, I've worked on the show for 39 years. January will be 40.
That was next month.
Next month.
Will be 40
the
years.
Show will be 40 years old. Uh-huh. I should force the creator of the show, she who created the show, to do another episode. That would be Margot Adler.
I would vote for that.
Yeah. Well, I think she's probably up for it, as a matter of fact. She did the last episode when I thought the show was being canceled for the second or third time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, just that I, after that, got a new time slot, but I didn't know it. I didn't know that would happen. So, you know, I did the final show. It's still online, actually. And it was good. And Adler started her vampire
That
rant.
Was great. That oh, was you heard a that show. Great show. Yes, I was here. I was working, so I didn't That's hear right. every minute of it. But, boy, it was excellent.
Yeah. And, well, she's amazing. You know, I know people... listen to her and love what she does on NPR. And yeah, that's really good stuff. But the capability of what people do on WBAI, it just opens up new worlds.
Yes, that's really a great example of somebody doing good work somewhere and great work here.
Yeah.
And you know, the highs are higher. The lows are lower because of that freedom. But the highs are higher.
Yeah, they truly are. And such is, you know, art, that the lows are lower and the highs are mm-hmm. higher. Fass, used to talk to me about, you know, walking a razor blade of along a blade, basically, when you're doing freeform live radio, and how it could cut you, but if you floated across it, it was the most amazing thing. And he's absolutely right about that. And but Fass had some years in which he was not on our air, was on other air. And with all due respect, his heights here were greater heights. But no doubt his depths here were more horrifying depths.
Yeah,
well,
that sort of goes together. It
does, but it's art.
Yeah, well, yes, that's it. That's art.
It's the price of art.
And of course, the very things that one person would define as the depth, somebody else would define as the heights, because that's art too.
Yes, exactly. And somewhere in the early 1980s, you know, still in the aftermath of the don't ask, but I'll tell you, it's the 1977 WBAI crisis, which to me is still the most devastating political turmoil this station ever faced. And it wasn't internal. Part of it was on the front pages of the New York Times. I do not kid you. We had more than one New York Times front page headline about what was going on as a result of the 77 crisis. So I want to hear these people go, oh yeah, but in 2000, it's like, you don't know what a BAI crisis is, you wimps. You don't really
know. You newcomer.
You newbie. Yeah, exactly. And for me, almost everybody is a newbie. There's still a number of people here who've been, you know, Fast, Janet Coleman, David Dozer have all been here longer than I. And I started in 67, so... Shall we go back? Thank you very much. But what happened was in the 80s, and I always believe that WBAI is very often a microcosm of the political left. In the 80s, arts were banished for the most part. It was simply said that, you know, if you're doing arts, you're not taking care of business. You're not putting bread into people's mouths. And this is also the era in which, you know, everything was so-called politically correct, which on the one hand was ridiculous, on the other hand, a very good basis for existing. but this was very much what was going on at BAI, and arts programming got less and less and less, and over that decade virtually disappeared. And in the 90s, I dare say, the only arts shows, and the beginning of the aughts, or the noughts, the only arts shows that we had were grandfathered in, like Hour of the Wolf. And the newer arts shows, like, let's say, Nuff Said, did not hold on for just the reason I stated. And it is only, I would say, in the last few years that arts programming have started making sort of a comeback here. We're doing more radio dramas. Old-timers that come in from other planets like Anthony Sloan and are allowed to do a radio drama on his all-too-infrequent visits to this country. And these people didn't know who he was. They've never
That's
met him.
True.
There's no way. Not one of the people in power, not Kathy Davis, not Berthold, not Tony. They have no way of, you know, hearing of a guy. When was he arts director? In the 90s? In the late 90s?
Early 90s.
Early 90s, right. When did we do the Phantom Toll Booth as a radio drama at the Public Theater? That was a few years ago.
Well, when
I played the half a boy. And
when Monsters from the Id, the music show I started at BAI with, turned into Nuff Said. Anthony Sloan was the arts director.
Yeah.
And again, didn't understand why we were doing that, but listened to the show and was converted.
But you see, Sloan did something that all good arts directors do. He put stuff on the air that wasn't necessarily to his taste, but that he knew had a place on
the
air.
Yeah.
He knew that there were people who valued Nuff Said. He knew that there are people who valued Hour of the Wolf. He doesn't read SF. He doesn't read comics. This is not his forte.
There are comics he reads. I've talked comics with
him. Oh, actually, yeah. I should take that back because I don't know whether he did or didn't. I certainly know that he'd read certain key books, including my favorite all-time book, which had its 50th anniversary last month, and that's The Phantom Toll Booth.
Hmm.
And he did a radio drama of it in Martinson Hall.
One of the last episodes Enough Said as a regular show was with Jules Feiffer.
Was it really?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw.
I did two episodes in a row because there was so. I mean, he's got such a huge career to cover, but I wanted to also. He wanted to take phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And so, since we wouldn't have had time to talk about all this stuff he's done and take calls, he came on 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
it was wonderful.
Yeah, I have to have Danny Fingeroff back for almost exactly the same reason, because you know, there's too much to cover.
Mm-hmm.
There's too much history. You and I had Danny on. Well, it was about 6 weeks ago now.
Was it 6 weeks already?
Something like that. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, maybe a month. Time goes.
It does
so
go.
Quickly. Yeah, time goes.
In fact, there's
and there's just so much to cover. And he had how many years in the Marvel bullpen? But, you know, not just counting that, because that's what we did discuss. He has all these books on the histories,
mm-hmm.
including his new Stan Lee book, of course, which is one of the reasons that he wanted that timing was to promote that book coming out now. But that's his history of Stan Lee and interviews and very special items in there. It's a cool book. I've seen the PDF of it anyway. As have you, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And but, you know, we didn't get to talk about his psychology.
Yeah, that
science
was
fiction psychology.
That was a surprisingly good book. I did a show on that and I really I told him I went to see the book, but I didn't commit to doing a show about it cuz I didn't think it could sustain a show. And then when I read the book, of course, it was clear that it could.
Yeah, not only that, but there are other people now who, without mentioning Danny Fingeroth's books at all, are turning out series of, you know, what if Clark Kent was psychoanalyzed? What if, Wayne were psychoanalyzed? And it's like, you know, that's not only been done, but it was done very well in one book by a person who, well, helped not create, but further along the careers of these
An insider.
Yeah, by an insider, exactly. Not an insider in psychology, but in the world of comics.
Yeah, I remember reading one of those articles psychoanalyzing some character, and it was so, I mean.
These are new books I'm
I was insulting.
About.
I was so insulted reading wherever it was, and they were clearly trying to be commercial by doing comics, but clearly not liking comics, not liking comics fans, talking down to them, and never having read them. Because almost every reference they did in comics was to movies.
Well, there is that. And that was, of course, true when science fiction was a ghetto.
Mm.
I mean, I would say that today science fiction is accepted as a poor relation to literature. But at least it's accepted. People are going, oh, yeah, well, this person, yeah, she does write well, doesn't she? And yeah, she has something to say. And you know, Ursula K. Le Guin is an important writer. And now Jonathan Lethem is teaching here, and he's got the David Foster Wallace seat at that university. And Michael Chabon, yeah, he writes that science fiction. Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, right.
You know, and they grudgingly accept it. And however, in you know, certainly when this show began. It was the ghetto. And you say, well, you know, what do you think of 1984? And they, well, that's not science fiction. That's good.
Yeah, I told that story of Joseph Hell's story.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And you still hear that occasionally. But it used to be the litany.
Yes, it was.
It used to be that if it was science fiction, it couldn't be good. If it was good, it wasn't science fiction. And the same, of course, is true with a lot of comics.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're still getting that.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Although commercially now, comics are in front of the curve. But that's really because of the movies.
Yes.
And because Comic-Con, which has very little to do with comics, uses the word comic to put it on a more commercial
base. It was a real comic book. Book convention at one point.
Well, yeah, but not for 10 years.
Certainly there are still panels with, you know, a lot of the giants in the industry that are very well attended.
All the giants in the industry.
A couple thousand people going to panels.
Yeah, but how many people are attending Comic-Con?
Now they're at the, 75,000 or whatever.
Something like that, yeah.
Still not as big as the conventions in Europe.
Spurlock, I'm trying to remember his first name, the guy who made, he's a documentarian, he's made good documentaries. Apparently just got greenlit to start producing his movie on the culture of Comic-Con. I think he's done a lot of the shooting, but now he's getting funded. You know, post-production has to begin and all that, the hard part. Morgan Spurlock. And that will be interesting. But frankly, I don't want to go. It's not. And I've been to New York Comic Con once. And yes, there's real science fiction there. And yes, there's real comic books there. But that's not who the people attending it. It's not what they're about.
Yeah, they're not interested in you know, getting a sketch from an artist.
They may be interested in many of the same things I am.
And it's interesting is that, and this is true of a lot of conventions, is that if there's something that's new and cutting edge, people are like, that's weird. I never heard of it. It's different. I don't want it. And then it catches on. And everybody is like, oh, I could have bought the first issue from the artist and et cetera. And they let it go.
Yeah.
And it happens over and over again.
Yeah. So again, this was, I mean, certainly at the time I was doing it, it was a ghetto. At the time Baird Searles was doing it, it wasn't even a ghetto. It was just non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing. And he was working in a void. There was no radio drama. Radio drama died in about 1959, and Searles was doing it in 1966. You know, he would have done it earlier, but he was doing other things. And he wasn't just then replicating the great radio dramas that Max Schmid plays and all that stuff. He brought in people. Well, yeah, he brought in some of the masters. He brought in Theodore Sturgeon. And some of the great radio dramas were, you know, based on Sturgeon, if not written by him, at least Dimension X and X minus one. But he had Sturgeon. But on the other side, he had working with him, for him, he had his script girl, Joanna Russ, a title that, you know, this fierce feminist. You know, the script girl. It was the 60s. Let's just say it was the 60s.
Right. Yes. And society was still growing.
Society was still growing. Baird did not discuss his being gay. He was homosexual.
Right.
Not homosexual. Homosexual. he had this incredible voice. I shouldn't demean him by trying to replicate that amazing voice. And then he had Tom Dish. Sort of hanging out and just doing stuff for him. Neil Conan, who did a lot of the reviews on Baird's show of Unicorns and Universes, and is, basically, I think he owns and operates NPR. that's it. I mean, he has any job he wants there at this point because he's just one of one of the founding producers of NPR. But he was here first. And on Hour of the Wolf with Margot. But before that, he was on Of Unicorns and Universes with Baird Searles. And, of course, the hopefully ever-present Samuel R. Delaney, who was a staff member, was a WBAI staffer, unpaid staffer. But, you know, he's working full-time for more than a year. And still, if asked, will come around, although, you know, health is now an issue and the fact that he earns a living at Temple University. So there that does get in the way. But that was the cutting edge. And when Baird left in about 1970, and I, fanboy over here, wanted to, you know, try to pick up the gauntlet, I had that opportunity. Why? Somebody answer.
Why?
Oh, you're the other person in the room. Oh, okay. Thank you for asking me that question. listener-sponsored radio. The premise of listener-sponsored radio means that we can do this cutting-edge stuff. And even when it's not cutting edge, it may not be cutting edge in the SF community, what I do. And some of the stuff you have done may not be cutting edge in the world of some of the better books on comics and all that, but nobody's doing it on the radio. That was the point.
Yeah, most radio shows on comics are 15 minutes of reviews. And after a while, the person gets bored getting free comics and stops doing the show.
Yeah, and also because usually they're at college stations.
Yeah.
They graduate.
And there's that, too. And then there's people who interview everybody they know, and that takes about a month, and then they're done. And it just...
Except over at USB, where Lister is from, where Howard still does his science fiction show.
Science fiction show,
yeah. With science fiction and comics, and he does a broader range than what I cover. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and again, Icon gives him access to a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly. And Icon also represents, you know, a broader range than what I do. Because right. I don't do that much comics on this show. I respect it. I enjoy it. Some of my best friends are comic book writers, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
Chris was at the reading again last night. The Ellen Kushner, Delia Sherman reading. So, you know, we had our own luminaries of the comics industry there last night. But and he better be coming to the next one as well. The next one will be a book called Subversion. It's an anthology, and I'm going to have three of the writers reading from that anthology. Daniel Jose Older, who is... he's not an ambulance chaser. He's in the damn thing. He's an EMS guy who very urban. He does hip-hop as a performer. He's a performance artist. But he's this brilliant writer with a great voice. And so he's in that book, and he will be reading. And then a woman by the name of K.T. Holt, who I had not read before, she was in this anthology. And a woman named Barbara Krasnoff, who in the review that came out 2 days ago got 5 stars for her short story.
Yay. Yay, good for you, Barbara.
Yeah. Not good for Barbara. About time they recognized it. But
yes, it takes years to become an overnight success.
Well, that's the case, isn't it? But no, she got a splendid review, as well she should. So that's next month, Years of Reading, and Chris... I want you to be there. Anyway, I digress myself.
Well, you know, since there's half an hour left of this fun drive,
we should give out a phone number.
We should give out a phone number.
Yeah,
this half is not an hour left. You can be among the very last people of this entire fun drive of this entire year to donate money to WBAI and keep shows like this going.
Yeah, because we've been giving you a reason, which is not the reason that you've been hearing earlier in the day. Those are all good reasons, too. We have a different one, arts programming.
Yeah, arts programming and cutting edge and people going places that...
And cutting edge entertainment.
You don't even realize how important those places are until later.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of history. When you're in the middle of it, you don't really think of it as history. It's just life. And then suddenly it's like, it's history.
Yeah. So that phone number is 212-209-2900. No.
2900?
No.
2950.
That's the one.
That's it.
212-209-2950. See, I always screw it up. I always say 2900. And so that's how I caught
and
you.
There
because
is,
I always make that freaking
there
mistake.
There is one volunteer back there.
Wake her up.
And only one. And in
fact... Make her stay all... Make the fact that she volunteered
yes, she
to
was,
stay all night
she was
worth
gonna
her
leave
while.
At around 11:30. And I was saying, oh boy, how am I going to do this? Because she was the last volunteer, and it's Cookie. And I said, and she's like, what's wrong? And I said, well, I'm supposed to help Jim pitch, and there won't be anybody to answer the phone if I'm successful. And so she said, okay, I'll stay.
So make it worth her while.
And so that's above and beyond. And so call 212-209-2950. And $25 member of WBAI.
That makes you a full subscriber to the station. And you can vote in our elections.
And $60 for a T-shirt. And
we have new T-shirts.
New T-shirts with the radio for the 99% is on the back of it.
Right.
And
which isn't fair, because if somebody very, very wealthy wants to give us a $5,000, I think our limit is $5,000.
Is it?
I believe it is. There is a limit. Somebody can't just donate $100,000.
Why not? I was going to do that.
We're on to you. No, because it's the whole idea. It's the listener sponsorship thing. If somebody could give money through a corporation, they can grant things. They can pay a bill for us. They can. They can pay for some capital.
So they can pay a month to rent a transmitter.
That could be done.
Because that's certainly well over $5,000.
Yeah, it is. But
$5,000 a week wouldn't even cover it.
I think more likely they could buy us equipment. I don't think they can pay anything ongoing. There was a time when they said, well, we'll pay the salary of an intern. Thank the intern for being there, but we'd like to give that intern something. This person will pay for it. That was deemed improper and illegal for various reasons.
Wow, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, that's a few years ago. I mean, maybe these rules have changed. I don't know. But people also have to remember that we're not a New York nonprofit. We're a California nonprofit, and we operate under California state law here at WBAI.
Well, I should mention
we're part of Specifica.
The T-shirts,
they're not California T-shirts.
They're tailored for men and then tailored for women. It's not one-size-fits-all genders T-shirts that most places have.
Well, that just tells me where we got them from.
Oh, okay. Well, you can tell me that.
Oh, it would either be Cafe Press or Zazzle.
Oh, okay.
Has to be one of the two. They just generate things, and I'm not putting that down.
I have no idea, but I just know that when I write down all the premium codes for all the different sizes, it's all different sizes male and all different sizes.
And that's
female.
Really nice that there are female sizes with a bit of something coming in at the waist.
Right.
That's always very attractive. For people to see and help spread the word about the station.
So it says WBAI in the front in different colors, and radio for the 99%, and like a headphone sort of.
And I think it's really wonderful that they're taking skim milk into account, because I can't drink that whole milk stuff. So I just go for the 99%.
Right.
If ever I earn a living. Well, anyway, 212-209-2950.
Isn't he silly, folks?
And pledge. And he works at it, too. 212-209-2950. Please.
And if there's more calls than Cookie can handle, I'll run back there and answer phones.
Yeah.
So, Jim, you'll have to keep an eye out on the screen there.
Yeah, I will do that. Yeah, I haven't learned really how to interpret this screen.
Oh, well,
but
I better
know that if there's no action on it, then it's not doing anything.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yes, if the little green dots turn into little yellow phone symbols, that means
okay.
So.
No, there's one that's sort of like flashing slowly and saying 256.
Oh, okay. That's probably a phone that
I assume that's
Cookie
a phone.
Is about to answer.
No. It's been lit all time.
Oh.
It's been doing that since we came into this room and beforehand. So I just figure it's a typical, whoops, I clicked on it and I got back this weird thing. But there, new callback for group fund drive. You see, this is what I'm referring to.
Oh, that. Yeah, those messages.
Oh, great. Can we listen to it? No, I don't think we should do that on the air. But, oh, that would be a wonderful thing to listen to. I had a great idea years ago for a radio show. a really great idea, but neither the station nor the people I knew to supply the material wanted to do it. I wanted to take transcriptions of the crank calls received at the CIA, which had such things as somebody saying, "Get out of my brain!" and things like that, and just get actors to perform the calls, the crank calls. I mean, we get our own wonderful crank calls.
Yeah, when you say transcribe crank calls, I was thinking you meant crank calls that we get at BAI.
No. This is better than that.
There's plenty of those.
Yeah, all I have to do is give out the other phone number and people can hear them.
Yeah,
you know, it's very simple. We can do that live. No. Another good one that we did actually do a couple of is I did crank calls for the Hayden Planetarium. May the Hayden RIP. Hmm. When Mark Chartrand did a show here, he was the director of the Hayden in the 80s, or in the early 80s, and he told me about some of the phone calls they got, and certainly, you know, planetary influences and all that, and meteor striking Earth, and all this various stuff, and sometimes these calls came from very unusual places. And very interesting places.
Yeah, I guess you could do with a lot of that. I mean, like the weird questions people get asked at national parks, the weird questions at computer helplines. You know, there's all kinds of things you can do with that.
I broke the cup holder is the most famous
one. Yeah, right, the cup holder, yes.
Yeah, but these are very often.
Are Yellowstone, simply, where do you keep the animals at night?
Yeah. I mean, but these were what I'm referring to were at the time, answering machine messages and voicemail. Today, we would say voicemail. So it wasn't that there was a person on the other side. It was just, you know, the equivalent of letters to the editor. And at the Hayden, you know, and I was saying, you know, I'm not using names. I'm not going to use their voices. All I want are the words that the people said with the names taken out. If there are names and no phone numbers, you know, just give me 555, you know, area code 212-555-5555. And you know, we'll get a couple of actors to do dramatic readings of those calls. I thought it was such a great idea.
Yeah, that could be fun.
So if anybody from, you know, a corporation, a government institution. I mean, all of them have got to get really cool phone calls, right? The best calls from 311.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, except they're all answered. There are no voicemail messages for 311 because they're 24/7.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I know somebody who was a 311 operator. And
oh, really?
Yes, it was not a job she liked doing.
Yeah, it must be a very, very, very difficult job, I would think.
Yep, it's difficult, it's stressful.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's government, so it's also oppressive.
Yeah, the whole atmosphere. Yeah. But on the other end, the idea that it exists and that I know, you know, that I can find out certain things or at least ask the questions. And I usually get satisfaction. Not always immediately.
Hmm.
But I've never been, like, rudely tossed off ever since 311. Was put into effect. It's pretty cool. Investigative reporters love it, including ours. I've spoken to a couple, Jose Santiago, about something, and I said, "How can I do this?" He said, "No, call 311. They'll tell you."
That's good. Yeah.
And, you know, and it's like, oh wow, okay. And he's not. You know, he's not. Our news director is not the first person who would, you know, just say call the government.
212-209-2950.
We have 10 minutes left, and
ten minutes to be the last person to pledge for this particular fund drive in this particular year.
Yeah, when is the next one?
Martin Luther King Jr. weekend,
February.
Well, in January. Well, there's just like a 2 or 3 day.
Oh, okay, but the next major, drive.
The next big one is in February.
In February, my God!
Like the whole month of February.
Oh dear. Only 2 months away.
Yeah.
212-209-2950. If we made money now, this is an old thing, but it's actually true, but we'd have to do it on a very big basis. We make money now, we can do less later.
So we need 30 people to need Dr. Ali's entire library.
No. We just need the maximum donation, assuming it's $5,000. We need 30 people to give $5,000.
Oh, okay. There you go.
If we got that, we could shorten the drive by at least an hour. The next drive. I guarantee that if we got that kind of money, if we got over $100,000 before I have to go off the air in 15 minutes, we could deduct an hour from the next fund drive. Easily. I promise you. But if we got, even $100 right now, it would be a show of faith and saving face to the powers that be here that the kind of programming that we do, and I'm still not convinced that everybody among the powers that be understand what it is that some of the shows here do. Yeah. But what they do understand is the necessity of the survival of the radio station.
So four people pledging $25.
Yeah, exactly.
And if that happens, let me know, because I'll run back and answer.
Two T-shirts would do it. Two T-shirts.
Yeah, two T-shirts. Right. $60
for
the T-shirt.
Shop. You know, collect them all. Which pot here is the phone? Is it this one? What, is that one? No, that's the phone. That's our phone. So it's got to be one of these two, right?
Oh, I don't know what's hooked up at this point.
Yeah. It says right there, Thon phone. It must be that. Good morning, Lester.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, it's hug time. It's hug time. Everybody watching the webcam. And for Lister's show, webcam would be worthwhile.
Yes, it would be.
Probably.
Yes, it would be.
I mean, not broadcastable, but at least it would be...
Perverted.
Nah, not perverted. Compared to what's on the web...
Yeah.
No, it would be something. One call is coming in. Thank you very much. Let's get another one. 212. I guess the microphone isn't turned on, or we would have heard it. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. And one person is currently I'm reading it wrong. Yes, one person is currently calling in using a wireless. And that means one of those large old radios, right?
Yes, that's right.
You know, I heard the show over the wireless.
Yeah.
That means it's probably a Cathedral Phillips radio. Or you know, I have a Zenith.
Oh, great.
I really do. And it works well whenever Peter Zanger is around. And it's stereophonic. It has the what was the name of the man who invented FM? The Armstrong system.
Right.
It was the first radio ever to have the Armstrong system.
Does it have that green light when the bass goes?
No, it does have like an Art Deco type thing. It's made out of Bakelite. It's a 1949 model, so it's a late model. It's a portable. It's about 18 inches. No. I mean, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous radio. It really is. But it has all that stuff. It has five bands. You've seen it.
Yes,
I have seen it. Yeah, and I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of it. It was willed to me. There was a woman who came to WBAI. To answer phones and to do some acting in some radio dramas. Mm. And I met her and her husband. They were the most charming people. They were also rather elderly. And when they passed away, they willed me two things. One was that radio, and the other was a box with two hats in it. One hat was a top hat,
great.
And the other hat was an opera hat.
Great.
You know, the opera hat is the one that folds flat.
Ah, yes.
So it's called an opera hat because that's... You know, top hats are the ones that do not go in. That's made out of beaver and silk. And the collapsible one, well, that's totally fallen apart. And I've got to fix the top hat. But the lowest quote I got on just repairing it is about $300.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, certainly, I don't want beaver on it. But, you know, whatever material is required to fix that thing. Because, and then it comes in this huge leather case that says, by appointment to the king. So that gives us the approximate. So that would be from the 20s, I would think. You know, by George, I can't remember the name of the king. Anyway, 212-209-2950. We had one call come in and go away, and we probably have a tally lag.
Certainly is, seeing as how the tally coordinator is saying that the tally coordinator is saying that the tally coordinator is not there.
Are you lagging, Ken?
Yes, I am lagging.
You're lagging. But I don't find you lacking, just lagging,
yes,
which is a whole other kind of thing. 212-209-2950. Pardon me. Wow. Coughing it up. I'd like to get at least one more pledge to feel satisfied.
Yeah.
That we have done something this morning other than extol the virtues of skipping.
Well, yeah, if that person is getting a T-shirt, we need another T-shirt to top $100.
Yeah.
So.
But I never made the point I was making before about the ghetto, is that movies now is what people think of. When you say, oh, you like comics? Oh, yeah, it's like I'm really looking forward to seeing the Avengers.
Yeah, yep. And it's funny because you'll read a newspaper or magazine article about a comic book character, and they'll say it's a comic book character, and then all they talk about is what goes on in the movies.
Right. And I'll say, do you like science fiction? And people will say, oh, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing the Avengers. And it's like, nah, wrong on two counts. Yeah. I'm a snob. I don't do that comic stuff. That's what I've got Ken Gale for. You know, we have our own comic book department here at WBAI. Don't talk to me about that. You want me to do comics on the air? Fine. Ken, host the show. That's it.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
No, he's not exaggerating.
No, I'm not at all. I'm not at all. And, you know, the first time I asked Ken to do it, who does he bring along? Jim Shooter. Even I know who Jim Shooter is. You know, it's amazing. It's absolutely freaking amazing. But so,
I was doing a fanzine on the air. I mean, that's really how I thought of it.
Well, that's how I started. Yeah, but it's not.
Well, you said an APA.
It's not a fanzine. It's not an APA. That's not what you did. Let me argue.
Okay.
What you did was a semi-prozine.
Okay, well.
Let me explain the difference. Fanzines are zines created for and by fans. You weren't doing it for fans. You were doing it for any audience. Everything you did was accessible. Fanzines are not for the great unwashed.
Yeah, okay.
Fanzines are only for the cognoscenti. They're only for the fans.
I'll acknowledge that correction. Sure. Okay.
It's splitting a hair, but that's the point. And that's, I mean, what I did when I started Hour of the Wolf, the first couple of years at least.
So my roots were in fanzines.
That's
right. You're right.
Yeah, but what you did was you took your roots of knowing how to create a fanzine and making it palatable to the public and relevant to the public.
I understand the difference you're pointing out, and I have to agree with it.
You don't buy fanzines in stores, not even in comic book shops. Generally, you get prozines or semi-prozines that are about the things that appeal to fans, but are meant for everybody.
Yeah, I'll go that. Yeah,
Starlog
or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, Barbara used to work for Starlog. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. It's her deep dark secret. She actually had her own magazine.
Well, it's not a secret any longer. You just broadcast it in 50,000 watts.
No, well, I guess so. But it was, I did it in between the frequency, you know, we're at FM. So I did it only when the, you know how it goes, it's frequency modulation. So there are waves and it goes up and down. When I said that, it was only in the middle part of the wave and therefore only heard by the
people.
You're
afraid she's listening, aren't you?
She's got work tomorrow, so no. But she's probably going to listen to the stream, to the archive.
Now she's going
to
know you outed her.
She's going to hear me tomorrow. Well, she did a very good magazine called Future Life that was under the Starlog imprint and lasted for a while, but it was too literary for Starlog.
Yes,
yeah, but she worked for Starlog, but she didn't for a while as well, doing articles and editing.
So we've got 1 minute for people to pledge membership in WBAI. 212-209-2950. In a minute, the membership drive is over.
Yeah, I'm going to lower the TARDIS.
So you can be the last person to pledge on this drive.
There's an historic thought. Be the last person during this fundraising drive, yeah. Because when Lister comes in, we are restoring the radio station to its proper programming.
Yeah.
With Burn Baby Burn Clapper. And that sounds like an interesting way to restore the station with something with that kind of a title, right?
Well, that is a kind of, yeah, absolutely.
It's like, okay, restoration, Burn Baby Burn Clapper. Yeah, somehow yeah. That's more like, you know, take it down!
Yeah.
Stop it! Yeah, right!
Yeah.
But hey, that's the amazing show that he does. And well, that explains some of it right there. 212-209-2950. I would love in the next 45 seconds to get one call purchasing a WBAI t-shirt.
Yeah.
Or even giving $25 to become a member. 212-209-2950. I will tell you that next week I'm going to have a great guest. So you have to pledge now.
And who is that?
That's N.K. Jemisin. The third book of her trilogy is just out. And it has, she's gone from being somebody who was just a regular guest on Hour of the Wolf and Altered Fluid into becoming one of the most acknowledged new writers in the field. Hugo nomination, Nebula nominations, two or three.
So it's that cutting edge stuff we were talking about.
It really is.
And where it's like, who's that? And then it's like, hey, wait a minute, this famous person was on that show a year ago, and I was saying, who is that?
But bless her, she still does the show, even though
her star
is rising. It has risen already, but it's rising further, and she'll be here next week. N.K. Jemisin, or Nora, as we like to refer to the N in her name. And, I've got Lev Grossman coming up, best-selling author of The Magician and The Magician King. If you don't know that stuff, you should. He's also the technology editor of Time Magazine. Nice day job.
Did I meet him on a Saturday morning a year or two ago?
No.
No?
Okay. No, you may have met him reading at a New York Review of Science Fiction reading with Barbara Krasnoff. The two of them read together last April.
Like alternating words in the same story?
Yeah, that was exactly it, yes. my job here is done. Whether I want it to be or not, my time is up. And the sales of silver have become fleeting with their gossamer wings. But if at least you're out there listening, I thank you for that. It's still not too late to call. Be the last, you know.
Yep. I'll go back there and take the call myself.
Yeah. And we all appreciate your being out there, and we all appreciate the fact that we're going back to real programming in but 2 minutes.
212-209-2950.
That's the number to call. Please make that pledge now. Please.
212-209-2950.
Please do not let the fact that I could not do a proper show this week suffer in vain. Make a pledge. And, you know, all this stuff that we were talking about the arts and all that, we need to demonstrate to the powers that be here that people like this stuff. And the only way that they're going to know that is if we get pledges. That's it. 212-209-2950. So thank you all for listening. There goes the theme. And thank you, Ken Gale.
And thank you, Jim Freund.
And...
And pretty soon we can all thank Lister, because he's coming up soon.
Indeed. And thank yourself for listening to him, because it's a treat. So have a good morning, and take care. Oh, yeah, check out the website, ourwolf.com. Steer towards the sun.
there. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am
a bitch. The red, white, and blue who spit on you.
Myself, torching the symbol of oppression. Let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth? That's all the way I see it. Well, I'm going off berserk, cause the system work to jerk. My people, the people, all around the pigs work. Tell me I'm wrong, though, that's my right, and it's right in the Constitution. Yo, that's an illusion, huh? Suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover, the red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm the lover of this flag, like many others take the same turn. Like me, they yearn for the flag too. Burn the material of the imperialist in a blazing inferno. Cause my hurt is internal, the American dream, a nightmare. To wake up to the lies, the pigs make up imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call the fist, cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Farmy, but you want me in prison? Cause I'm pissing your tag. The flag, I rag it and snag it and drag it and rip it to shreds. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy. So just hand me a flag from the fascists and watch me burn that piece of to ash. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn. 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 Let's find the people who hate this. These are the places we'll hit.
Number one, Panama. Talking about Peru. Azania. Brixton. Belfast. Can't forget Korea. Beirut. Can't forget Haiti. Iran. Puerto Rico. Colombia. Mexico, talking about uptown, Harlem, New York City, y'all, and Nicaragua, East and South Central, LA, California, IA, Miami, do or die, Bed-Stuy, never ran, never will, Brownsville, boogie down, South Bronx, yeah.
My man Joey to jail, and now they got him in court because he burned the flag. That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle the Star Spangled. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home. Land the free, boom, this is the home of the slave. Now hold on just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why wanna scold me when I touch the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so why?
My own.